meditation, which is there with us 24 hours a day. It is there all the time, reminding ourselves what our nature is. We may be engaged in so many activities, that is all fine, but internally, what our nature is, that is what we should be remembering all the time. Sometimes when something else happens, if we have to go astray, we remind ourselves, bring us back, and then start remembering the same thing again and again. So this is what in Vidyasana we do. So first the stages are Upasana, Vedanta, Vedanta Shravana Manana Mandala, and then we go to Vidyasana, and then finally gain Jnana. That is the stage, and there is no shortcut to this at all. Nobody can say, I straight go to Vidyasana, I know Aham Brahmasmi. They all have no meaning. The person may know Aham Brahmasmi as words, but he will never know Aham Brahmasmi what it is. So this is the only way, there is no other shortcut. So now Krishna says, you should remain always established in the Lord. He never says, actually he says, because as we told in the other class itself, Krishna never says you should be established in the Lord. He says you should be established in yourself, your own nature. Because the moment you think of Lord as separate from you, then there is Veda Buddhi. That should never be encouraged in Vedanta. So you should always be established in yourself. That's what Krishna says all the time. So Upasana is a preparatory step and Nididhyasana is assimilatory step. That is where we assimilate the Vedanta teaching. Upasana involves Dvaita because you have always something to be meditated upon. So there is always two. I am the meditator, something to be meditated upon. So there is duality here. So there is Bhedam here. That means separation is here. Whereas in Nididhyasana, there is no Bhedam Vritti at all. You are not, there is no Lord you are meditating upon. You are meditating on the nature of yourself. Aham Brahma Asmi Iti Jnana. So Nididhyasana assimilates that knowledge. In the 6th chapter, Nididhyasana is actually, you know, assimilating this content of the 5th chapter. Whatever we saw in the 5th chapter, it is now going, we are not assimilate all. Now in the 6th chapter, the meditation topic itself, we can now classify into 4 topics. Whatever we told earlier, they are not in the 6th chapter. They are all preparatory steps. All the relaxation, meditation, they are all preparatory. Now in the 6th chapter, whatever meditation is talked about by Krishna can be broadly classified into 4 groups. One is called Bahiranga Sadhana. These are all Bahiranga Sadhana, are those preparations which are remotely connected to Nididhyasana. These are all Bahiranga Sadhana which are remotely connected to Nididhyasana. And the second topic is Antaranga Sadhana, those which are immediately connected to Nididhyasana. So which are remotely connected to Bahiranga Sadhana, immediately connected is Antaranga Sadhana and Dhyana Swarupam, the actual meditation itself, and Dhyana Palam, the benefit of meditation. These are the 4 topics that are addressed in the 6th chapter. So all shlokas that we learn, we have to fit those shlokas into one of these 4 topics. So we will be analyzing them, how to fit each one of those shlokas into these topics. These are the main topics that are addressed in the 6th chapter. So the first 2 are preparatory steps, Bahiranga Sadhana and Antaranga Sadhana. They are preparatory, and all the verses of the 6th chapter, they will fall in one category or other. But Krishna doesn't give it in this order. He doesn't make it as a systematic development. This is the order I have told you here. But he has not made any systematic development. It is all strewn all over. But we have to fit whatever shloka based on the context and the meaning to one of these topics, of these 4 topics. But actually, whatever order I have given, that should be the natural order. But Krishna has not resorted to using this order, because you cannot confine Krishna to some order. He is Krishna. So you cannot confine all these orders and all for us. So it is, so he has put them all the shlokas in all the ways. Okay. So then and then we have to analyze each shloka and find out which of these shlokas would fit into this category. Now, why do we have to talk about the preparation for meditation itself? There is no, people come and tell you meditate, close your eyes and meditate. Why should you talk about, we are talking about so much about the preparation for meditation, not meditation itself. Preparation for meditation we are talking, why not go straight there? Because we should remember, meditation is the job of what? Of the mind. Meditation is the job of the mind. It's not the job of my hand or my legs, or it's the job of my mind. So manasa vyaparaha dhyana. Correct? That is manasa vyaparaha. Business in the mind. So because it's a purely mental exercise,
both in the case of Upasana and Nidhyasana, for both, whatever may be the meditation. It's a mental exercise. So the only difference between Upasana and the Nidhyasana is, in Upasana, the thoughts, all the thoughts, they will be centered on an external deity. If I want to Upasana or some deity, Ganesha, Shiva, whatever it is, all the thoughts are concentrated on that external deity. Maybe a Lord, a mantra, it's a Parayana, it could be anything. But they are all external to you. They are all going to be external to you. It is Anatma Vishayaha. So Anatma Vishayaha, Manasa Vyaparaha, that is Upasana. In Upasana, we are still, even if it is going to be Krishna, Shiva, whatever it is, they are all still Anatmas only. Only Atma, Chaitanya alone is Atma, others are only Anatma. So maybe God may not be a thing, but they are still Anatma only in the Vedantic play. So it is still, Upasana is still meditation of Anatma only. Okay? So in Anatma, so whereas in Nidhyasana, it is Atma Vishayaha. Atma Vishayaha is the Vyapara. Manasa Vyapara here is for the Atma Vishaya, not Anatma Vishaya. So that is the essential difference between Upasana and Nidhyasana. That is, because Upasana deals with Anatma, Nidhyasana deals with Atma. But what is common for both? Manasa Vyapara. Whether it is Anatma Vishaya you are meditating upon, or Atma Vishaya you are meditating upon, both deal with meditation, which is the job of the mind. So both deal with the mind. Only objects are different. In one case it is Anatma Vishaya, in the other case it is Atma Vishaya. So if I have to naturally, if I have to do the Manasa Vyapara efficiently, then what I need? I need a very good control of my mind. Because it is the business of the mind. So unless I have mind in my control, I cannot do this meditation effectively. Because of the road, it's an instrument. So if, for example, if I want to operate a car, unless I know the car very well, I cannot operate it efficiently. Any tool for that matter. So if you want to make mind as the instrument to meditate, we should know the mind, the nature of the mind, and also the control of the mind very, very efficiently. Otherwise, we cannot deploy, we cannot use this mind for this meditation efficiently. Because in meditation, the instrument is mind. But many people normally they forget this fact, and that is why we have, you know, they have all the wonderful plans for meditation. They will all plan for meditation. I have like this, I will have all agarbatti all around, I will have fragrant flowers everywhere. You know, I will have very pure, and the house will be very clean. Nobody, I will let them in. All the preparations they will do. But mind will, the moment they sit in meditation, 1 minute meditation, of 29 minutes, all other things. Mind will have only that. Because you cannot focus the mind. Mind is having all the current. It's not firm at all. It is not pure. It is not, it cannot be stabilized. There is no control. So sitting quiet, closing eyes, all those things will happen. But clean meditation will not happen because mind is not under control. So we have to control the mind. So Shama. Shama is control of mind. Mano Nigraha. We already saw the definition for Shama. It is the control of the mind. So for Vedanta Shravanam itself, we have prescribed Shama, Dama, Uparama, Titiksha, all those things we have seen earlier. Then what to talk about Nidhyasana? Even for Vedanta Shravanam, you need all this. If you have to just listen to Vedanta, you need all this. Then to practice Nidhyasana, you know how much we should need. Preparation should be needed. So that is one thing. And we face another type of problem. Controlling the mind is a very, very difficult job. Why? Because mind is a very subtle instrument. A car is not a subtle instrument. You have to learn a few things and that's enough to control the car to run it, no problem at all. Whereas mind is a very, very subtle instrument, it is not tangible to me. Whereas all of the things are all tangible to me, this is not tangible to me. I cannot experiment something and see whether this would work or that would work. It is not tangible to me. So first thing we have to control is the grosser instruments. So before you even go, we are now talking about meditation. For meditation, we said controlling the mind is important. But before going to control of the mind, we are now telling we have to first control the grosser instruments and then alone we can think of controlling the subtler instrument, the mind. So unless I have control over my Annamaya Kosha and Pranamaya Kosha, because how the various koshas are, Annamaya Kosha, Manomaya Kosha, Pranamaya Kosha, Manomaya Kosha, Vijnanamaya Kosha, and finally Annamaya Kosha. So Annamaya Kosha is the grosser plane. I have to first control that. And then I have to go to pranamaya and try to control pranamaya kosha. Then only manomaya comes. So you are talking about the business of the mind to control that. First, for that, we need the other two have to be controlled. Annamaya kosha has to be controlled, pranamaya has to be controlled. Unless these two are controlled, we cannot even, we won't have a scope even to go into manomaya kosha. Right? That's how, because it is very subtle. So if you have no control over pranamaya, I cannot control manomaya at all, because pranamaya precedes manomaya kosha. And so the control has to begin from the external plane, and gradually mastery has to be gained over the inner instruments till you reach mind. Because mind, as I told, is inner equipment. It is antakkarana. Whereas all the other things, like sense organs, they are all not here, indriyas. Whereas mind is antarindriya. It is the inner equipment. Then only we can do this thing. So this is very, very beautifully done in the Yoga Shastra. Yoga Shastra addresses this aspect of it very, very elaborately. See, because it is so systematically dealt with there, what we will now do is to go through the Yoga Shastra, and then it is known as Ashtanga Yoga. In Yoga Shastra, it is called Ashtanga Yoga. How elaborately this is dealt with there. Even though Ashtanga Yoga stops at one point there, we have to go beyond that for Vedanta. But for the preparation, that is very important and that is very useful. So what we will do now is to go through Ashtanga Yoga and see what are the various steps involved in Ashtanga Yoga. Ashtanga means eight limbs. Ashtanga, eight limbs. So eight limbs of meditation are eight limbs of mental control. That is what is talked in Patanjali's Ashtanga Yoga. Okay, Yoga Sutra he gave. So yoga means actually mind control. It is chitta vritti nirodha, mastery over thoughts. Vritti means, I told many times, these thoughts. So mastery over all thoughts, that is called chitta vritti nirodha, mental discipline. That's what it is. And what are the eight limbs of the Ashtanga Yoga? Yama. Yama is the first one. Yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, samadhi, Ashtanga Yoga. So these are the various Ashtanga Yogas. Yama means the discipline in the form of withdrawals. You withdraw from things, do not do things, not doing things, avoidance of things is yama. And niyama, we are going to see each one individually. The niyama is the discipline in the form of do's. What are the things to be done? So what should not be done? That is yama. What should be done? Niyama. And then asana. Asana is a physical posture, physical discipline. This is called asyate asmin iti asana. So the physical discipline, this is physical postures. And pranayama is breath control, that we already know. Pratyahara is sense control. As we control the breath, your sense control is pratyahara. In dhamma, in Vedanta we call it dhamma. Shama is mind control, dhamma is sense control. It's pratyahara in yoga. And dharana is the fixation of the mind on any object of meditation. It could be a devata, it could be a mantra, it could be parayana, it could be anything. So fixing the mind onto that is dharana. And dhyana is folding the thought in the same object, continuing the fixation. You can first fix. After fixing, it may go away here and there. Having fixed, you have to fix it there permanently. That is called, this is dhyana. And samadhi is total absorption into whatever is being meditated upon. These are the eight limbs. Now we have to see each one of them in some detail. Now yama, when we say yama, we said it is all don'ts. What are the things that should not be done? Avoiding to do lot of things, right? Actually, they have given five in this list of yama. What are the things to be avoided? First thing is ahimsa. Ahimsa means what? Avoidance of hurting someone, that is ahimsa. You cannot cause himsa even unintentionally, whether it could be verbally, whether it could be by deed, by words, it could be anything. One should avoid hurting any person, even by any of these faculties. That is avoidance of all these, that is called ahimsa. And the second thing is satyam. Satyam means avoidance of untruth. You can never speak untruth. Generally, satya we normally will translate what as speaking the truth. We normally translate satyam as speaking truth. But here it is avoidance of untruth. Even though it means the same, avoidance of untruth. We need not speak the truth all the time. That's what, because when you say satyam, speak the truth, that means you speak the truth all the time. Here you need not have to speak the truth all the time, but you should not speak untruth. And you need not also have to speak the truth completely. You can speak some truth that is relevant for that person for that occasion. You may be told some truth, doesn't matter, but don't speak untruth. Okay, that is the avoidance of, see, if I have to speak, I have to speak only truth. If I cannot speak, keep quiet. But if I speak, I shall speak only truth. So don't speak untruth. All truth also need not be spoken. But whatever you speak will be only truth. So you speak the truth, you need not speak the truth, but don't speak untruth. So you speak the truth, need not speak the truth, but don't speak untruth. So that is, this is the second thing. So this is called Anrita Varjana. Trutam is Satyam. Anrita Varjana means avoiding speaking untruth. So if the truth cannot be spoken at all, what you should do? Observe mauna. Keep quiet. Because sometimes truth cannot be spoken. There are occasions where you may not be able to speak the truth. At that time, don't speak untruth, just to keep quiet. Okay. Third one is called Asteya. Asteya is not stealing. Theft. Even mentally. You cannot even mentally commit theft. You cannot do that. That's Asteya. Then fourth is Brahmacharyam. Brahmacharyam is what? It's not the Brahmachari bachelorhood that we are talking about here. Avoiding illegitimate relationship with anybody else. This is avoid, because that is Brahmacharya. Actually, this is the beautiful story. When Parikshit was born, he was born like a lump of flesh. It was no form, no this thing. It is just, you know, like a dead body. It was just there. So everybody was crying and all that thing. And suddenly you had an Ashari. Ashariri, you know, means what? Shariri means with body. Ashariri means whole body. So you hear some ethereal voice. And that said, if there is somebody who is a Nitya Brahmachari, if that person would touch this child, the child will wake up. Or the child will be saved. There are all the Pancha Pandavas are there, so many Rishis are there, so many big people are there. Nobody dared to touch that child. Nobody was confident about the Brahmachari. Krishna was there and he touched. Who is Krishna? The man who married how many thousands of wives? Had all that Krishna, he went and touched. He had the courage to touch it and he touched it and the child came to life. So that is Brahmacharya. Brahmacharya is not to have all the relationship whatever you have. That relationship should be only legitimate relationship. Illegitimate. So only one marriage, all that thing, they are all to be followed there. That is Brahmacharya. So avoiding illegitimate relationship and sensual pressures at all. So that is called Maithuna Varjana. Maithuna Varjana means any other. Maithuna means all kind of relationship. Avoiding all of them. And the fifth one is called Aparigraha. Not coveting too much at all. Not having greed. That is Aparigraha. So literally Parigraha means possession. Possession something is Parigraha. Aparigraha means non-possession of more than what is needed for you. So whatever you need for sustenance of your livelihood, have that. But do not try to have greed and try to think I should have everything all the time. Okay? So all these in the form of don'ts. You should not have them. They are withdrawals. They are called yama. And the next category is niyama. Niyama, here all of them are do's. What are the things should be done? What are the do's? First is saucham. Here also they have got five. First is saucham. Saucham is purity. Purity, which is a very, very positive job. We have to clean the physical body. We have to also clean the mind. So both the mind and the body have to be clean all the time with a positive thought. They also have to be clean with what? What will you use to clean the mind? Clean the dirt of the mind with positive. Body you can clean with that soap and this soap, all kinds of things depending on the extent of birth. Whether you have taken bath for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 5 days, depending on that you might use more soap. Whereas for mind, you have to clean the mind through good thoughts. Very good thoughts, noble thoughts. And second one is called Santoshaha. Santoshaha means contentment, not just happiness. This is contentment. I should positively tell that I am happy with whatever I have.
I should positively tell. I should not tell this for the sake of another person. I should, when I say that, I should mean it. Yes, I am happy with whatever I have. Wealth, whether it is beauty, whether it is mental features, anything. It doesn't mean only to money. It's anything. Not that people, why? If I have been another 2 inches taller, it would be nice. Whatever you have, be happy with that. Because there are so many people who don't have many features which are even full. I mean, there are so many children, they are born with a lot of defects. God has given me all my faculties. Let me be happy. So I should be happy and be contented with that, right? And then tapaha. Tapaha is discipline or austerities. Various vows, various austerities that I follow, I take. All to discipline what? To discipline my organs. Maunam is disciplining what? My walk. So that I don't just be talking to people like this, you know, all these frogs. They make on, go on making this noise. In the process, what do they do? They only invite a snake or something to come and they tell them, I am here, I am here, I am here. So the snake comes and grabs it. So do not speak. Actually, I am going to talk about the speech itself sometime later. That speech is a very interesting thing. Of what to speak, what not to speak. There are so many things are there. I will tell about that some other time. But here, discipline means, maunam is disciplining the walk. Fasting means what? Disciplining the tongue. Because when I fast, I don't just eat anything I want to eat, so right? I don't eat at all. So disciplining the tongue. So these are all willful denials. I do all these things because I want to control my senses. Okay. Then swadhyaya, that is the fourth one. Swadhyaya means study of the scriptures or parayana of the scriptures. I have to do adhyayanam of scriptures. Swadhyaya and Ishvara pranidhana. That is the fifth one, Ishvara Puja or worshipping of the Lord. All these are do's. Everybody has to do it. So we saw already the don'ts, which are Yama, and Niyama, which are the do's, which everybody should do by each other. And the third one is Asana. So Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara. Third one is Asana. Asana means various postures. Various postures are given there. And why various postures? So that the physical body will be in good condition. I cannot do only some posture to help my hand. Then hand may be strong, leg may be useless. So I should be able to do so many postures, so many exercises to address all the body, the entire body, so that they will all be strong. So meditation, shravanam, they all require sitting. You know, if you want to listen to a class for 1.5 hours, you should sit and listen. During that 1.5 hours, you know, we change the pose like this, put the hand like this way, that way. And at least we don't do here, at least stretching the leg. I have seen lectures here where people just in presence of the teacher, not through Swamiji, you know, sit like that. I have seen all that. So this is postures, the discipline in the postures, how one should be. One should be when they do that thing. So that unless the body is in good condition, it is very difficult for the other knee will ache, that will ache, they have to go to the chair, they need backrest, all those things are needed, right? So if I cannot sit for 1 hour comfortably, if I have to change poses every 10 minutes, what can I do? Because attention will be on the knee pain only. It won't be on the subject. So to that extent, it won't be a good sadhana. So we have to have good physical posture. So they have got so many sources. Posture, Padmasana, Sukhasana, Swastikasana, Vajrasana, so many asanas are there. So people can practice these asanas so that they can be physically fit to carry through this particular study. And then pranayama. Pranayama, we already saw it in the fourth chapter. There is all these three steps involved, Rechakam, Purakam, Kumbhakam. So you inhale, you hold, you exhale. All those things are all there. So in pranayama, we are directly controlling the respiratory system. But indirectly, what do? We are controlling the entire pranamaya kosha, the fivefold physiological functions, prana, apana, vyana, udana, samana. All of them, each one is responsible for a physiological function of the body. So by controlling the respiratory system, we are controlling all these entire functions of all the pranamaya kosha. So prana is directly controlled. Apana, vyana, udana, samana, they are all indirectly controlled. Why? Because the pancha pranas are correlated. They are not independent. All these prana, apana, vyana, udana, samana, they are not independent each other. They are all correlated. So they are connected internally. So if one is improved, all others will be naturally improved. So if one is weak, others also will be very weak. That's why you have to control the breath. That is why they say when one does pranayama, hunger increases, right? Because digestive power becomes more by just breathing. Digestive power becomes more, right? So that's what they say. Hunger is a sign of health. Samana is activated. When you have hunger, samana vayu is activated. So that means you have got hunger. And that, so pranapana samayuktaha pachamennam chaturbhijam. That's what Krishna told. So samana alone is called Vaishwanara Agni. Jataka Agni. Vaishwanara Agni is samana vayu that gets activated. So you start what? Pranayama is toning the entire pranamaya kosha. So pranayama has to be practiced. Asana is toning the entire annamaya kosha. The entire the gross body is controlled by asanas. And pranayama controls the entire tunes, the entire pranamaya kosha. And the next one, the fifth one is called pratyahara. Here, up to pranamaya, we are now talking about annamaya and pranamaya we are talking about. In pratyahara, we are coming to the manomaya kosha and vijnanamaya kosha in pratyahara. In manomaya kosha, what are the parts? In Chaturbodha itself, we saw earlier at that time. Manomaya kosha consists of the mind and the five sense organs. These are not the organs of action, the sense organs. Therefore, to take act of the manomaya kosha, we go to the sense organs first. Why? They are grosser. Before we go to the subtle thing, which is mind, we first control the sense organs. And having controlled the sense organs only, we can go to manomaya kosha, which is subtler. And this is called the pratyahara. So, because mind and the sense organs are connected, mind, sankara, lana are independent, they are connected to each other. If I am purifying the mind, okay, I do a lot of things to purify the mind, but sense organs are still reading all rubbish, hearing all rubbish. They are still giving all the things to the mind. You keep on cleaning, able to clean fresh things only. Right? You cleaned now, you get dirt, clean, keep on. So, you will be, the entire life will be spent only in cleaning all bad things. So, we will clean from one side and we will be entertaining all bad things from the other side. So, manomaya kosha has to be purified at two levels. One is existing negative thoughts should be removed. So many crud is there, they all have to be removed. And also, I should not allow the sense organs to receive fresh negative thoughts. So, both have to be controlled. That means what? I should not read anything that will lead to what? All kama krodhas. I should not hear things which will lead to all these kama krodhas. I should not read, listen, see, all that. So, I should not see things, I should not listen. So, I should not have friends who will imbibe negative thoughts in me. So, you be clever in choosing who your friends are, who your associates are. So we have to clean and close all doors which will bring impurities into the mind. We should do that. So, if sense organs alone are controlled, then the existing impurities will spoil the mind. So, it's not just only either this or that. It should be both. You control the sense organs. Mind is not pure yet. So, mind has all the crud. It will go on, doing that. It will spoil that also. So, mind should be emptied from negative thoughts. And all fresh negative thoughts also should not be entertained anymore. So, if the existing thoughts are only removed, then sense organs will begin to refresh thoughts. So, the other way also. So, both should be done. And this is called the pratyahara, sense control, control of sense organs and the mind. And the sixth one is called the dharana. Dharana, where we have come to the mind proper. Earlier, it says an indriyam. Now, we have come to the mind itself. Fixation of the thought in the object of meditation. Whatever we want to meditate upon, fix the mind onto that. If it is upasana, it will be an anatma vritti. Because upasana is for anatma vritti only. Because nidhityasana only is atma vritti. Upasana is anatma vritti. Nidhityasana atma vritti. So, aham brahmasmi iti vritti is fixing the mind into that thing. I fix my mind in what? In that thought, aham brahmasmi. That is nidhityasana. So, these are truth for both upasana and nidhyasana. Whereas in the case of upasana, vritti will be fixed on anatma and nidhyasana vritti will be fixed on atma. That's the only difference. Okay. Here also people may have these doubts. For example, anatma means what? Even an idol in the temple, is it atma or anatma? No. Anatma. Anatma only. If you chant Om mantra, I'm chanting Om, 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 meditating on Om. Is it Atma or Anatma? Anatma only. Anything external is Anatma. Aham Brahmasmi iti jnanam. I am Brahman, Brahman. That is Atma. All others, whether it is Pranava, or some Shiva, Krishna, Venkateshwara, doesn't matter. Any idol, any image, any picture, they are all Anatma. So anything other than the self, the Chaitanya, including Saguna Ishwara, including Ishwara, they are all Anatma only. Okay? And so Dharana is fixation. And then Dhyana. You can fix the thoughts for some time, but they cannot continue for a long time. 1 minute may be okay, 2 minutes fine, 5 minutes, some extreme cases perhaps. After that, no. So concentration, people have only for a very short time. It's not there for a long time at all. So we need concentration, number one, and we need also consistent concentration. The concentration should be there all the time, consistent. So in Dhyanam, the attempt is to continue the same vritti pravaha in Dhyanam. So in Dharana, you fix the mind. In Dhyana, what you are doing, whatever vritti thoughts you had there, you would try to continue to have that thought only throughout the entire time. That is Dhyana. So, undisturbed by all kinds of dissimilar thoughts, all kinds of diversions, they cannot disturb me at all. I am engrossed in this thought. That is fixing the thought in that is Dhyana. Okay. So, if you have some instrument for focusing, then focusing is Dharana. So this is what we are trying to do. But many people will focus, afterwards it will be dangling only. First, you have a camera, you want to focus on it. You can focus maybe for a few seconds. Then again handshakes and all that. It doesn't. So we should be able to focus for consistently for a long time. So focusing is Dharana and retention permanently is Dhyana. That's the difference between Dharana and Dhyana. And the eighth thing, final thing is called, when the retention succeeds, when whatever object I am meditating upon, when the retention succeeds and the person absorbs in the object of meditation, that is called samadhi. I am totally engrossed, totally absorbed in that. You go and touch him, nothing happens. He is totally oblivious to the entire surrounding. He is totally engrossed, absorbed in that. That is called samadhi. Okay. So these are the 8 different Ashtanga Yogas. So the difference between Dhyanam and Samadhi is what? In Dhyanam, that also we should understand. Dhyanam also, it is, we said, you know, is completely engrossed. Samadhi also is engrossed. What is the difference between these two? In Dhyanam, there is an effort involved. I should focus my efforts to retain the thoughts. That is Dhyanam. Whereas in Samadhi, no more effort involved. It is natural. He is in Samadhi. It's natural to him. He is not putting any effort at all. He just went into that kind of a stage. He is already there. That is Samadhi. So these are the Ashtanga Yoga. Yoga with the 8 limbs. And if you really observe the development here, then what we can hear, see what? This is given by whom? This Ashtanga Yoga is given by a Rishi called Patanjali. Patanjali Rishi. In his Yoga Sutra, he has written Yoga Sutras and he has given it there. He is a very great Rishi, who has given an ideal system for preparation. This is preparation for what? Right. He has given an ideal system for preparation. Yoga does not contain Vedanta. So nobody should say Patanjali is a great, you know, Vedantic teacher. He is a yoga teacher. He gave Yoga Sutras. So this is not for Vedanta. So it has nothing to do with Atma Jnana. So if you follow all these steps and then say I will gain Atma Jnana, nobody will gain Atma Jnana by this. They can discipline themselves. It's a preparatory step only, but it gives all the sufficient exercises to integrate the personality. So right now, even though I am one person, I am still in bits and pieces only. If you really ask yourself, we are all bits and pieces. We have no coherence of any kind. Mind tracks this way, this tracks this way. You want to hear this, you want to see this. Suddenly something happens, you immediately attention, somebody comes there, all my eyes will turn there. That is how we are. To focus the entire thing and then bring the mind, all the sense organs, all in one place to integrate the personality, this helps. So this helps for that. One of the most excellent sutras ever possible for the development of a person to become a total person. That is Patanjali Yoga Sutras, because it has taken the human being as a whole. It addresses every aspect of a human being. For example, if you go to a doctor, allopathic doctor, he will be with only the physical body. And then maybe a right eye doctor, yes, right, is left eye doctor, no doctor is here. Then maybe a right ear doctor, left ear doctor. They are all specialists. This is a heart specialist, this specialist, they deal with some part of the body. Whereas this Yoga Sutras that deal with the entire body, including the mind. Not the doctors, they may know some hypnotism, all these procedures, they will do some, but they won't address the mind in total. Whereas here, this is the unique glory of yoga is what? It takes into account the physical, the mental, intellectual, and also the spiritual aspects of a person. That is why Yoga Sutras are very important, and Patanjali has put forward that entire thing. It is a very, very old science, a great preparation for Vedanta Shravana. It does not contain self-knowledge itself, so we have to understand that. So we have a lot of people who say, by doing yoga, you can go to moksha. Nobody can go to moksha by doing yoga. You have to still go through Shravana Mananam, all that thing. But this is after preparing yourself, getting all these things, then tadvitti pranipadena paripreshnena seya. You already know that. So by going to a teacher, then learning from him and doing all the service to the teacher, you learn these things and go on meditating upon it. So yoga is one of the best preparatory sciences for Atma Sadhana. Okay. Now how do you see the development? The first, the Yama and Niyama are external disciplines. Yama and Niyama, they have external disciplines at the activity level. What to see, what to do, what not to do, what action to be done, what to be seen, not to be seen, what to be eaten, not to be eaten. So these do's and don'ts, they deal with all activities at the external level. And from there, asana. So first you dealt with activities at the external level, and then you came to the person at asana. What you did? You came to Annamaya Kosha of myself. My body, my grasser body, I came into disciplining that. And then pranayama, we have come to the pranamaya kosha, and pratyahara for the sense organs and mind, and dharana, dhyana, samadhi for manomaya kosha and vijnanamaya kosha. You know how this, even the way Patanjali has developed it, he has developed it in this sequence. So that is why this is how the sequence can be done. Directly one cannot go and address the mind and say I'll clean it and make it stable, all that thing is not possible unless one goes through this evolution. It is very, very difficult to discipline the mind and also discipline the sense organs. So we are going interior and interior from all external planes. First outside of the body, then on the body itself, grasser plane, and to subtler and subtler things. So what I want to say here is, even in the Ashtanga Yoga, Dhyanam is given only as the seventh step. Meditation is given as the seventh step. We are talking about meditation. Even Ashtanga is given only as the seventh step. So how will it, for example, if a person starts with meditation, Dhyanam first, what effect it will be on him? Even in Ashtanga Yoga, it is given as the seventh step. And this guy goes, you know, he will take some meditation course somewhere, wants to get himself, pay some $200 or $1,000. And go to a meditation class, I'm not giving any benefit at all. That day will get a benefit. Maybe for that one hour, you may sit in a nice environment, that's all good. Some music, you may sleep perhaps. All that may happen, but it won't do any good at all unless we go through this entire evolutionary exercise. So this is what most people attempt to do, straight introduce meditation without going through any of the previous steps. It won't be effective. One after the class, it has been recorded. So it will only give rise to only negative results, it will go. So neither the Yoga Shastra, nor Vedanta Shastra, nor Bhagavad Gita, they prescribe meditation in the beginning at all. None of them prescribe meditation in the beginning. In the 6th chapter also, we will see Krishna does not begin with Dhyanam in the beginning. So the 7th step only is Dhyanam. So the first 6 steps are preparatory steps. So these 6 steps are preparation alone, and they are divided into Bahiranga Sadhana, external preparation, and Antaranga Sadhana, internal preparation. I first outlined four steps, right? Four topics. So these 6 steps, they are Bahiranga Sadhana, external preparation, and Antaranga Sadhana. So these 6 steps are divided into that. So remote preparation and intermediate immediate preparation. We can call it remote and immediate. And what is the difference between these two? The very life itself of a meditator has to be a very, very regulated life. It cannot be just a random life. The life of a meditator should be a very regulated, disciplined life. It should be a disciplined life. Because in the whole, for a whole day, for example, he has led an indisciplined life, getting angry with people, frustrated, agitated, anxious, worried. And he wants to sit for 20 minutes and do meditation. What meditation he can do? The moment he sits, only all this angry and all those things only will cross the mind. This person cannot have a peaceful mind at all. But he may go for 20 minutes for meditation class. What use it for that? The entire day is going to be like this. So what will come in the mind? Only all these things will come. Then Ishvara will never come. All this anger and krodha only will come. So we think that 20 minutes or 10 minutes we can pray, practice mind control without bothering about the 16 hours the mind has gone through earlier, right, in a day. So even 7 to 8 I want to do meditation. Before 7 o'clock what the mind went through the entire day, we think they can all be just a shut off. I can just sit for 20 minutes on meditation. It's not at all easily possible. It's like trying controlling our children, you know. When somebody comes to the house, you tell the child, or make all contracts. Today if you behave like this, I will give you so many dollars. If you have to bribe the children also, right? No? You have to tell the child, oh, today Swamiji is visiting the house. You should all know, don't put your fingers in the mouth. They are listening. You have to tell the children all that, right? The moment Swamiji comes, he would have got written the contract only for 5 minutes or 10 minutes. If the Swamiji happens to say 15 minutes, that's it, done. Your contract covers only for 10 minutes. So that's what happens. So it is like trying to control a child. That's what we are all children only. We only think we are adults. In what way we are different from them? We are same. We are children. Maybe it's glorified, and maybe it's not told outside. So it's like this. So we have allowed the mind to worry all the time. So we have a double personality only. That's what we do. So if we are physically actually in the bathroom, but mentally in some other place. Same physically in the meditation, but mentally some other place. So within that 10, 20 minutes, if you want discipline, it's not going to come at all. So life has to be disciplined. Life has to be oriented, moderated, moderated all the time. So Bahiranga Sadhana is general discipline all through life. That's not just for this 5-minute meditation. All through life it should be done. So which alone Krishna calls it by a totally different name, Karma Yoga. Bahiranga Sadhana, he calls it by a totally different name, Karma Yoga. A karmi can never relax. A person who is only oriented about actions, doing this, doing that all the time, can that person ever relax? He can never relax at all. Even though he is, you know, that person may be free. We are all born free, right? The land of the, you know, the land of the brave and the home of the free, whatever. So, you can be free in all that sense. Are they really free? No, at all, right? So, a karmi can never relax. He can never relax at all. Whereas, a karma yogi, he can spend 15 minutes with himself. Whereas, a karmi can never. Because he can never relax at all. A karma yogi can. And this is not directly connected with meditation also. This is something else. This is external discipline. Controlling all these things and this external discipline. So Krishna will talk about actually ahara discipline also, food. He will talk about food discipline later. He will talk about all that thing. How much to eat, what not to eat. If you eat this, what will happen? If you eat that, what will happen? He is talking about all that later. He is going to do that. How much to be active? How much to be passive? No, you cannot be active all the time. So we all have got all these three gunas, right? Sattva guna, rajo guna, tamo guna. Right? We want to be sattvic. Majority of the time. If you want to be sattvic, 100% of the time is it possible? Not because it is difficult. We don't want it also. Because mind needs rest. If you want to be alert, 100% of the time you can never sleep. Sleep is a gift. You have to relax. So sleeping is a tamasic ability. So you need tamoguna also. You need activity also, rajasic ability also is needed. You have to search for food, you have to earn food, you have to work. You cannot be sattvic, alert all the time and then revel in God all the time and all that. You cannot sit in a corner and do that. We have to carry out all these to make a living. We cannot say, I will deny living for myself. So you need all these gunas also. So all these things are needed, but how much to be that? You have to be sattvic predominantly. But you have to have some rajasic and tamasic elements also. Because of too much activity, people become workaholics. They become very active. They are workaholic people, right? Overwork. Some people do not do anything. That is also not good. Always inertia. The sun never rises for them before noon. So there are people who are, for some people, Saturdays perhaps or Sundays. Sun rises at noon. So discipline at work level, sleep level, ahara level, speech level. Look at that. Can we ever discipline at all? If it is all these levels of discipline. But they all have to become our nature. We have to train the mind and our body so that this discipline becomes our nature. It's not something that I want to do or I have to do. This is my nature. This is how I am. Getting up in the morning, early morning is my nature. Woman, people getting up early morning, go brush my teeth, it's my nature. It all, somebody need not have to tell me that, right? So we all have to develop that as a natural process for us. So this is what, you know, at all levels. And this is called the Bahiranga Sadhana, remotely, indirectly influencing the meditation process. All these things go. Whereas Antaranga Sadhana, where the preparation done just before meditation. So this is you are doing all the time. And just before starting to do your meditation. You want to meditate every day, even 4 o'clock. Even 1 hour. Just before doing the meditation, you have to do follow a certain things. That is called Antaranga Sadhana. So Bahiranga Sadhana is preparation taken care throughout day-to-day life. Whereas Antaranga Sadhana is the preparation done just immediately before the meditation. For example, like choosing a nice spot. You want to be in a comfortable place. You don't want to be disturbed by people. So many people walking here and there, you want to go sit in a corner. Sitting in some other place. That is choosing a place, putting an asana properly. For example, you want to sit and meditate for 1 hour. You want to sit in a post which is comfortable for you. You cannot just be, I want to do Padmasana. Then people, two times may not even sit 1 hour the other. So we cannot try to force it to do that. It should be a comfortable pose. So that we can sit comfortably, comfortable posture, keep my body straight, withdrawing the sense organs, breathing smoothly. These are all immediately before the meditation. So these are all the Antaranga Sadhana. So Bahiranga Sadhana and other. So Krishna is going to talk about all these things, Antaranga Sadhana also. And then on Dhyana Swarupam and Dhyana Pala. These are the other two things, which are the two topics in this chapter. So Dhyana Swarupam and Dhyana Phalam. So these four topics, they are going to be discussed in this chapter elaborately. But what we have to do is, we have to try to fit each shloka to one of these topics as we learn them. Atha Shashtodhyayaha.
కార్యం
కర్మ కరోతి యః
అనాశ్రితకర్మఫలం
కార్యం కర్మ కరోతి యః
అనాశ్రితకర్మఫలం కార్యం కర్మ కరోతి యః అనాశ్రితకర్మఫలం కార్యం కర్మ కరోతి యః
స సన్యాసీ చ యోగీ చ
స సన్యాసీ చ యోగీ చ స సన్యాసీ చ యోగీ చ
నిరగ్నిర్న చాక్రియః
నిరగ్నిర్న చాక్రియః
స సన్యాసీ చ యోగీ చ నిరగ్నిర్చ నిరగ్నిర్న చాక్రియః
స సన్యాసీ చ యోగీ చ నిరగ్నిర్న చాక్రియః స సన్యాసీ చ యోగీ చ.
So in the first few verses, the first few slokas, Krishna talks about the Bahiranga Sadhana. Bahiranga Sadhana, this external discipline contributing to meditation. Okay. And here on, we will now use these four words.
bhajanaka sadhana, antaranga sadhana, dhyana, rupa-rupam and dhyana phalam. So you understand what they are. Then I use those words. And any sloka will belong to one or the other of these four categories. And what is that external discipline? We said bhajanaka sadhana. What is the discipline? It is nothing but karma yoga. Krishna is talking about here. This entire sloka, he is talking about only karma yoga. So karma yoga itself is called bhajanaka sadhana with respect to upasana or nididhyasana. So karma yoga itself, Krishna talked about karma yoga earlier in detail, but here it is talked about as bahiranga sadhana with respect to upasana or nididhyasana. So this sloka talks about karma yoga as a preparatory step for dhyana, preparatory step for meditation. Who is a karma yogi? Krishna says, yaha karyam karma karoti. Yaha karyam karma karoti. Karma yogi is one who does the enjoined action, the duty. Enjoined action is the duty. Who does the duty? Karya means here Veda Vihitam, Niyatam, Niyatam Guru Karmatvam. We already saw that earlier in the third chapter. So karya means that Niyatam, Vihitam, Veda Vihitam Karma, whatever is asked by the scriptures to be done, to do and not done. Right? That's why it comes here. So karya means the swadharma, one's own duty. Whatever is my duty, the enjoined duty prescribed by the scriptures. These are duties prescribed by the scriptures. Such a karma, yaha karoti, a person who does such a karma, that means he does not do any kamya karma at all. He does not do any karma because he wants this, he wants that and all. He does only those karmas which are, he is now in nididhyasana, understand that. He is not in karmakanda. He is now in nididhyasana, he is now in Vedanta Shravana. So karmas for the sake of this result and that result he is not doing anymore. He is doing that for the sake of this atma sadhana. Only he does not do nishiddha karma at all. Whatever karmas are to be avoided. I already told you what are the five different karmas. Nitya karma, naimittika karma, kamya karma, nishiddha karma and prayasita karma. He never does nishiddha karma at all. He performs only the karmas prescribed by the scriptures, by the shastra. And that is what is said here, karma palam anashritaha. With respect to having concern for the karma palam, he does action without any concern for the karma palam. I do action without any concern for the result. That because he is doing it as a duty. When you do something as a duty, can we expect anything from that? No, it is duty. Something might come out of that, that is byproduct. But my intention is not to gain that I do this karma. I do this karma because it is my duty to do that karma. Right? So karma palam. Actually karma palam anashritaya. Krishna said this actually in the second chapter. Yogastha kuru karmani sangam jatva dhananjaya. He already told the second chapter. Having given up sangha. Sangha means association. May you do your duty. He said at that time. Sangha means association is what? Association with karma palam. With the result. So may you give up that. Do your duty, giving up that. So similarly, he is also saying here, the one who performs such a karma, and why do you say that karma yoga is useful for meditation? Because then only we need to do that. We are now telling, because we may have that question. I am meditating. Why you are bringing karma and all here? Right? I am meditating. I am sitting quiet and thinking about something. Why you want to bring karma yoga here at all? There is no need. Right? In the second chapter, Krishna said, Yogastha Kuru Karmani Sangam Tyaktva Dhananjaya Siddha Siddhyo Samo Bhutva Samatvam Yoga Uchyate. He told at that time, for a karma yogi, the mind is samam. It is poised. Samam. It does not go through violent kama, krodha, all that thing, violent reactions. All these loba, moha, madha, matsarya, agitation, worries, depression. It doesn't go through all of them. Samam. It is poised, equanimous, harmonious. So mind is always calm for such a person. Father, it is always calm. So with a calm mind, if he goes for meditation, then it won't be difficult for him. With a calm mind. So in karma, there is reaction. In karma. In karma yoga, there is no reaction. In karma, there is always reaction. I do this, I want this. If I don't get that, I get angry or frustrated. Whereas in karma yoga, I do this. I said, or as an offering to the Lord. I do it or a sense of service. It can be anything. I do it as a duty or a sense of service because it is helping so many people, I am doing it. I am not expecting anything from that. I am just doing it because it helps other people.
So we already saw all those things earlier. So in karma yoga, there is no such reaction or expectation at all. In karma alone, there is expectation. So a non-reacting mind alone can do meditation. Mind, non-reacting mind is what? A mind without agitation. The mind without any such problems, that alone can do meditation. So for meditation, first you need a non-reacting mind. Okay. And Krishna wants to praise a karma yogi here. He says, sa sannyasi. In fact, karma yogi is a real monk, he says. A karma yogi, he is a real sannyasi. He is real a monk. Now, why he says that? So that Arjuna will not run away from the battle. He is now trying to find some way to get out of the battlefield. So, sannyasi, you become a sannyasi, he says, you will immediately take it. Okay, let me become a sannyasi. I don't want to fight this war. He will leave. But he says, a karma yogi himself is a sannyasi. So you don't have to become a separate sannyasi. If you are a karma yogi, you are already a sannyasi. Be in action and you can be a sannyasi. So that's what he is trying to impress upon him. So he says, it is not akarro and going to a sannyasa ashrama that makes a person sannyasi. You can be a grahastha and be a sannyasi also. So who is a true sannyasi? He says, saha karma yogi eva sannyasi. That karma yogi, he alone is a sannyasi. And we have to connect it to na niragnihi. That is a niragni, right? Na niragni. Niragni means an ashrama sannyasi. That's it. Now we have to go the different. Yes, he says you don't have to become an ashrama sannyasi. So niragni means an ashrama sannyasi. Niragni means an external sannyasi who gives up the family life and takes to akar robes. He is a monk. So why we call him a niragnihi? Because he renounces all Vaidika karmas. Vaidika karmas need agni. You need upasana every day if you are a grahastha. For so many rituals you need agni. You need so you perform so much of homas. So this sannyasi, having become a sannyasi, he gives up agni. For example, if he is Agnihotri, this person, he has to be maintaining all these agnis all the time. And one day he decides to become a sannyasi, he gives up that agni. No more. And then he doesn't have any more rituals afterwards, he becomes a sannyasi, he becomes a niragni. So agni, one who has agni, he is niragni, who doesn't have agni. That means what? He gives up Vedic rituals. He is not doing any more Vedic rituals at all. So agni here stands for Vedic ritual. All Vedic rituals need agni because they involve agni. All the rituals involve agni. So the daily upasana, agni, they all. He gives up all of them. So niragni he means nirgataha agni. Vaidika karma yasmat saha niragni. The one who does not have any agni ritual at all. Such a monk is not a true sannyasi. Krishna says, such a monk is not just a true sannyasi. So saha sannyasi karma yogi eva sannyasi, he says. Okay. So pravritti margastaha eva sannyasi natu nivritti margastaha, Krishna says. That akarrop sannyasi, he may be a sannyasi in akarrop, but he may not be a real sannyasi. Whereas this is pravritti margastaha, this grahastha, who is in pravritti marga, who is working somewhere, who is having action, who is doing so many activities, but he is a true sannyasi if he is a karma yogi. Whereas the other sannyasi, if he is not a karma yogi, even though he has akar robes, he may not be a sannyasi at all. Right? That's what he says. So Shankara actually, he says in this commentary, it is just to praise only, don't take it seriously. Normally this ninda, stuti, ninda is a convention in Shastras. Sometimes what they will say, oh, Vishnu is the greatest god. They will make statements somewhere. So that doesn't mean all the gods are useless. Vishnu Purana is greatest. When the Shiva Purana, Shiva is greatest. In Kaumaram, Subramanya is the greatest. Just to praise that god, they say that he is the greatest. So you don't have to go to all other Andhra Devatas, you don't have to go only to him, he will give you everything. You don't have to go to anybody else. It's not that they say all that. Essentially to praise that god. Not that others are belittled. So in a different context, they will be praised. So here also, in this context, for a grahastha who has to lead a disciplined life and the life of a karma yogi, that is to be praised. So for that, he wants Arjuna to be in grahastha ashrama and also become a karma yogi. And because of that, he is telling you don't have to go through that path. So he is not condemning miracles here. Vishnu immediately, so people will immediately make excuses. Oh, Krishna himself told sannyasis, don't go to any ashrama. Not like that.
This essentially for this reason, because sannyasis are actually there are so many other occasions where sannyasis are praised so much. So here in this context, we have to say, in Upanishad, sannyasa ashrama is praised so much really. In grihastha ashrama, in Gita, grihastha ashrama is praised. In Upanishad, sannyasa ashrama, so much. Here is grihastha ashrama. So all ashramas have their own glory. Brahmacharya ashrama has its glory, grihastha ashrama, sannyasa ashrama. All of them have their own glory. So why it is said is, when you look at a sannyasi, you should not disregard this person. That's why we have to say that. Adi Shankara, when he writes a commentary for Gita, he makes a special mention of that because we should never try to disregard an ashrama sannyasi. Who are we to disregard? Who are we to say that he is noble or ignoble? We are nobody to say that. So when the akarok has to be respected first. And then he is a sannyasi in some important. So that is important. So Krishna praises grihastha ashrami here as a true sannyasi for the sake of opportunity, for this context. So, saha sannyasi na niragnihi. And not only, saha yogi. He is a yogi also. Here, yogi here means meditator. I have told long time, you know, earlier, that the word yoga has to be understood in different contexts, in different ways. Here is yoga. Yogi means is a meditator. That karma yogi alone is a true meditator. So, that karma yogi, this yogi is not just karma yogi. That karma yogi alone, saha sannyasi, that sannyasi is karma yogi, that karma yogi alone is yogi here, is a meditator. Yogi here means meditator. Nacha akriyaha. He alone is a meditator. Nacha akriyaha. Not a one who is quiet, sitting quiet in the corner with closed eyes, akriyaha, without doing anything. Here is action. Without doing any action, the guy who is sitting in the corner closing his eyes, he is not yogi. This is the karma yogi, is a yogi. That's what Krishna is telling. An active grihastha. A karma yogi grihastha, he only is a true meditator. Karma yogi grihastha is true meditator, not a person who is sitting right in a corner, closing his eyes and thinking all other things. Okay. And the question will naturally come, how can we say a karma yogi grihastha as a meditator? Krishna is calling him a meditator. A karma yogi grihastha, he may be karma yogi, but he is involved in action all the time. He has to pay his bills, mortgage has to be paid, electricity bill has to be paid, he has to go here, he has to support his family, he has to do all this. So he is a guy who is always in the field of action. And how you call him as a meditator? Person who is being karma yogi, fine, but you call him meditator. How can you call him a meditator? Because when karma yogi when he does action, even though he does varieties of action, what is his goal? His goal is only moksha. For a karma yogi, even though he may be engaged in varieties of action, his only goal is moksha. And moksha means what he has to gain. I want chitta shuddhi. I want chitta ekagrata. I want jnanam. I want moksha. That alone is there in the thought all the time. He never says, I want promotion. I want this. I want to win $1 million. No. Always I want to gain moksha. I do action, all these actions I am doing. But what I want jnana. I want moksha. I want chitta shuddhi. All these things he wants. So this is that is his destination. His destination is that in which he is absorbed all the time. He is doing so many activities, that is true. But always he is absorbed in that particular thought only. So even though his physical body is involved in so many activities, mind is what it is doing. So, in the second chapter, Krishna said, a karmi's mind will wander. A karmi's mind will always wander. He will think of money, he will think of this time, that thing, all the time. Once he will think of money, another time he will think of wife, another thing the children, the promotion, office. Mind always wander for him. But for a karma yogi, even though he is involved in all of the same actions like a karmi, he also wants. He will also be involved. His primary concern is Atma Jnanam only or Moksha only, not any of the other things. Okay? That's what different thing. So, Adhyatma Chetaha, he is the one whose mind always is engrossed in Adhyatma Vidya. So, since Karma Yogi has got only one thing primarily in his mind, he is as good as a meditator. Even though he is not a meditator, in the real sense, he is as good as a meditator, because for a meditator what happens? Only one thing is in the mind, right? There is only focus on only something. Whatever it is. For this person, moksha alone is in the mind. So he is as good as a meditator. That's why Krishna calls him Savyogi, Saha Yogi. And meditation means what? Concentration on moksha. Concentration on Chitta Shuddhi moksha. So Krishna is only glorifying. He does not say, you know, don't sit and meditate and all that. You can sit and meditate, that's fine. But all the time, a karma yogi all the time thinks about only this destination, not anything else. So that is, so to, not to say you should not do meditation, that is not the tatpariyam here. Tatpariyam is this. Krishna is glorifying the other. Karma yoga itself is a good meditation, as good as a good meditation. Being a karma yogi itself is as good as a good meditation. So they form an ideal ground for later Vedanta Vichara. If mind is tuned in this direction, later in Vedanta Vichara comes. In Shravana, Aham Brahmasmi, you tell him, Tattvamasi, you tell him. That will make sense to him. Otherwise, it will be just words. As I told many times, they will be just only words which have no impact on me. They are just words. I can say also, oh, I know Advaita, Aham Brahmasmi, I know. You know only the words, not anything. I know even the words also not completely. So, Karma Yoga alone is a sannyasi, not an akarobed monk. That is what, as I told, the reason for that is Krishna wants to praise and emphasize these grahastha sannyasi. So, Karma Yoga alone is a meditator, not the one who is sitting quiet in a corner. Therefore, Arjuna, do Karma Yoga as the preparation for meditation, dhyana, nididhyasana. Now the question will be, how can you tell Karma Yogi, how can you call a Karma Yogi as a monk? We call Karma Yogi as a meditator, we understood why he can be called a meditator. Now how you call a Karma Yogi as a monk? How can a grahastha be called a sannyasi? Right? Krishna is calling Saha Sannyasi. How you can call it? So the very definition of sannyasa is what? One who has given up things. Right? Sannyasa means the one who has given up things. Sannyasa. A grahastha has not given up anything. He has got his family, he has got his bank balance, he has got his job, he has got everything. He has not given up anything at all. So how can a grahastha who keeps his wife, who has his children, who has his home, who has his bank account, or how can that person be called a sannyasi? Right? Is it a logical statement? That's the question will be there. So Krishna has to now show that grahastha also can be called a sannyasi. So how he is going to do that? He is going to do it in the next shloka.
Yam sanyasamiti prahuhu. Yam sanyasamiti prahuhu. Yam sanyasamiti prahuhu.
Yogam tam vidhi pandava.
Yogam tam vidhi pandava. Yogam tam vidhi pandava.
Yam sanyasamiti prahuhu. Yogam tam vidhi pandava.
Yam sanyasamiti prahuhu. Yogam tam vidhi pandava, yam sanyasamiti prahuhu. Yogam tam vidhi pandava.
Nahya sanyastha sankalpaha.
Nahya sanyastha sankalpaha. Nahya sanyastha sankalpaha.
Yogi bhavati kaschana.
Yogi bhavati kaschana. Yogi bhavati kaschana.
Nahya sanyastha sankalpaha. Yogi bhavati kaschana.
Nahya sanyastha sankalpaha. Yogi bhavati kaschana. Nahya sanyastha sankalpaha. Yogi bhavati kaschana.
Yam sanyasam prahuhu. What people call as sanyasa renunciation, tam yogam vidhi. That is nothing but practice of Karma Yoga alone. So Krishna is consciously suppressing the idea of renunciation here. To renounce and become a sannyasi, Krishna is suppressing that thought itself. Because they are all set for whom? For Arjuna's sake. They don't go and become a sannyasi in the grahastha. So there is something called sannyasa, which means giving up of everything, secluding from society, sitting in some corner and meditating. That is sannyasa. Such a sannyasa is there, but Krishna does not want to expose Arjuna to that sannyasa at all. He does not even expose it. So he is suppressing that sannyasa, that external renunciation, ashrama sannyasa, or Vividisha Sanyasa, another name for that is Vividisha Sanyasa, Ashrama Sanyasa. He does not want even to mention that. He does not even mention that. That is why he is saying here that a karma yoga way of life is sannyasa way of life. That's what he is mentioning here. So a karma yogi grahastha is a sannyasi. That's what he mentions. But on what basis? Krishna has not proved it. Because the word sannyasa means renunciation, that we all know. And a karma yogi grahastha renounces what? It's a karma yogi grahastha, not a karmi grahastha. A karma yogi grahastha, what does he renounce? Krishna gives the answer in the second line of the shloka. He says, karma yogi is sanyasta sankalpaha. Sanyasta sankalpaha. Karma yogi also renounces his concern for the results of action. Karma yogi, what he does? He does action, but he renounces his concern for the results of the action. He renounces that completely. So, karma pala sangam, he renounces completely. Association with the karma phala, the results of the action. So karma phala abhisandhi he renounces. And Krishna calls it sankalpa. He says sanyasta sankalpa. He calls it sankalpa. Sankalpa here means karma phala sangaha. The association with karma phala, concern for the result. That is he calls sankalpa. And the karma yogi is who? Sanyasta sankalpa. Karma yogi is one who has renounced all the concerns over the fruits of his own actions. He is called a yogi, here a karma yogi. Here yogi means is a karma yogi. So what we call a monk, who is generally a sannyasi, because he renounces all the actions, we call him a sannyasi, right? A monk, we call a monk a sannyasi, because he renounces all actions. Whereas in the case of a grahastha sannyasi, he does not renounce action, but he renounces the karma phala, the fruits of the action. So one renounces karma itself, the monk, another renounces the karma phalam, the fruits of the action. Both renounce, one renounces action, another renounces the results of the action. So renunciation is common for both. For a sannyasi and a grahastha sannyasi karma yogi, both are common. So a sannyasi renounces karma, and so he is shamaha, calm. Because he renounces karma, karma only leads to agitation. Karma only leads to the action. He renounces all karma, no scope for agitation, so he is calm. A karma yogi renounces his worry about the result, and so he is calm also. He doesn't do action at all, he is calm. This person renounces the worries, the fruits of the action, he is also calm. He doesn't care what comes out of it, he does it as a duty. I have to do this, I am doing it. That's it. What comes doesn't bother me. So he is also calm. So both are sannyasi. It is not the same. So both of them are not the same, but of different things, but the end is of the same. So whenever we have a mental agitation, we can always say the agitation is never because of the karma itself. Is the agitation because of the karma? No. The result became what I did not like. That is why I have agitation. Karma itself is not cause for my agitation. I can do any karma. But what comes out of the karma only causes agitation. So for this karma yogi, that doesn't bother him at all. In the other case, he doesn't do karma at all. Fine. This person does karma, but the result of the karma never agitates him at all. So he is ever free. So he is also sannyasi. Right? See, it's common fact. So we are able to analyze the situation and give a wonderful solution. All the things we can do, not agitated. But this we can do for others. Fine. When somebody has a neighbor has a problem, we can say, hey guy, don't get agitated. It's all fine. All advice is always for others only, right? When you are confronted with the situation, somebody else has to come and advise us. That's a problem. Because we get agitated immediately because we are concerned by the results of that action. What will happen? What will not happen? What others will think? How will we all worry about what others are going to think of us? We are never worried about what I am going to think of myself. What others are going to think of. So immediately want to hide. Hush, hush, stuff. All these things because we are always worried about the result of that. Whereas for a sannyasi, for a karma yogi, he doesn't have any concern for this sort of action. So when I am alone involved, all these problems come. But karma itself has no problem. So karma pala sangha alone is a problem. Right? Association with the result of the action alone is a problem, not the action itself. So karma yogi renounces karma pala sangha. Association with karma pala. So he is as good as a sannyasi. So So that is why we say, when Krishna calls him a sannyasi, this is why he calls him a sannyasi. That is what I said here. Nahi asanyasta sankalpaha yogi bhavati kaschana. He is actually putting double negatives here. Krishna is putting double negatives. What he wants to say is, karma yogi is one who has renounced sankalpa. Sankalpa means, as I told, the association with the result of the action. He has renounced sankalpa, our concern for the result, he renounced. So what all he has to say is what? The one who has renounced the concern for the result is a karma yogi. That's all he has to say. But he doesn't say it like that. He says in double negative, he says, one who has not renounced the concern for the result is not a karma yogi. But just to tell, the one who renounced this thing is a karma yogi. But he says the one who has not renounced the association for karma para, he is not a yogi. That's what he says. This is double negative, and double negative is chosen generally by, you know, people like this. Whenever you want to emphasize something, you always use double negative. That's what they use. So by putting in this way, Krishna emphasizes that one of the main criterion for karma yogi is not worry about the outcome of your actions. That is what he wants to emphasize. So not to be concerned about the result of the action. That's what he wants to emphasize. So both are sannyasis. The ashrama sannyasi, who renounced the karma, and the grahastha sannyasi, who renounced the karma phala. Both are called sannyasis. And he does not say that even that both are equal sannyasi. He doesn't say any of those things are false. He says grahastha alone is a true sannyasi. He doesn't even say both are equal. He says grahastha alone is a true sannyasi. The other one is not. To that extent, Krishna wants to emphasize to Arjuna that stay in the field of grahastha ashrama. Don't have to run away from that. As I told you again, you should not think that he is belittling ashrama sannyasi. Emphasis is on grahastha sannyasi, particularly for Arjuna in this context, so that he won't run away from the battlefield and not fight this war. Okay. Yo veda svaraprabho vedante prasiddhah tasya pramudhirinasya parasamheshwarah. Yes, now you can.